This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Coyle to the left circle for Makar. Back to Coyle, top of the point. Long reach, they score! Canucks with a face-off of the Colorado zone. Marcus Pedersen, heavy drive from the line, stopped by Blackwood. Rebound, they score! Dakota Joshua in front, fires it into the open net. And the Canucks have their two-goal lead back again. It's 3-1.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Terry Lankinen, he'll rim it in behind the Canuck goal, but it's cleared out to center by Hronek for Garland right wing into the Colorado zone. His shot rolled wide of the net. Rebound side of the goal is tucked in by Nils Höglander. And it's 4-1 Canucks with under 2 minutes remaining in this game.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks defeat the Colorado Avalanche 4-1 on the road. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. And as always, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650 or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We are going to bring in Randy Bjana into the conversation for the game review coming up in a few moments. And we'll get to your reaction as the show goes on. But what a night for the kids for the Vancouver Canucks. And we'll get to the three stars and, you know, the veterans. Lankinen was great. Sherwood was great. Joshua had a good moment. Rautu was good. And how about D. Petey stealing the show with a fight late in the period too? So, I know fans want that better draft pick, some of them. It is nice to see, though, some of those young players have a good game tonight.
Yeah, and that's what this is going to be about here. Once that E goes next to your name, is what growth is there from the young players, something that can carry over into the summer, bring into training camp. And look, I got a tweet from Gordy Locke here who said, not saying he has the highest ceiling, but since training camp, Elias Pettersson's had one of the steepest upwards trends in his career for the Canucks here. And so it's a nice boost there that someone like him is taking to the teachings, implementing it, now applying it at the highest level. And it's certainly an exciting thing to see when players are starting to live up to potential and unfurl a new potential layer to their game, and certainly to the hopes of future seasons for the Canucks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we're looking at now. It's been a season where the expectations were high, not only to make the playoffs, but perhaps do even better than what they did last year, where they won a round against the Preds, and it's been anything but. So now we're looking for the future, and for the future, at least a couple guys acquitted themselves really well against Colorado. Let's bring in Randy into that discussion. And, you know, lots to get to, because some milestones almost being hit, and, you know, some veterans having a good game. But what about the kids? DPD fighting Logan O'Connor, Rautu having a good performance. What'd you think of the youngsters?
Yeah, Elias Pettersson, guys, we've talked about him, you know, going back at least 5-6 games, but really since he got his opportunity at the NHL level, he adds a little bit more physicality, smarts, a little bit more creativity to his game offensively. And tonight was all about aggression. Tonight was all about flattening Logan O'Connor. And it's similar to what we saw maybe against Vegas. Remember, there was a similar play where he was boxing out against Tanner Pearson. Pearson's not the type of guy that's going to get up and take offense. It was more of a, all right, I see what you did there. Skate off. Logan O'Connor did not like the fact that, A, he got flattened. And what I liked from Pettersson was he kind of gave him the stare down, looking down at him to see, like, hey, I might be young, but I got some swagger in my game. O'Connor didn't like that. And to come back and fight. And you could see what that meant not only to him. He was smiling when he was in the penalty box, but all of his teammates, even as they were skating by on the next whistle, were kind of giving him like a smile or a wink, which got a reaction out of him. When he went back to the bench, you could see what it meant to the guys and Rick Tocchet for that matter as well. So, you know, I like seeing that swagger. I like seeing that aggression and confidence. And from Atu Rautu, same time of confidence, guys, just comes out in a different way. It's not aggressive, but he's winning faceoffs. He's creating opportunities for his team. And late in this game where he tried to go between the legs, like, that's a confident young player to say, hey, I'm picking up points right now. I'm winning draws. That's leading the goals. And he's feeling a little comfortable in the NHL right now, which is exactly what you want to see from both of those youngsters.
Elias Pettersson kind of had that Happy Gilmore moment where he's like, don't you ever touch my puck. It's kind of like that. He's like, don't you ever go into my space, baby. That's my space.
It.
And he dropped him and then was willing to back it up with the fight.
You know who probably loved that whole sequence more than anybody? Adam Foote. Because if there was an Adam Foote type of sequence, that might be it, where you're clearing the slot, you're clearing the blue paint, you're protecting your goaltender, and after that, you know, Foot was not afraid of dropping the gloves. He was a mean, one of the nastiest characters in NHL history. And sure, Elias Pettersson's not that, but that is a, you know, that's a mentality thing there. That's not a, hey, certain players can't take that role. But what we've heard from Pettersson, even from his days in Sweden, where he's got a little edge to him, well, he's expanding on that. There's a confidence there. And I like this from the young guy because, you know, a lot of young players, sometimes it's deer in headlights, you ease into the game. He hasn't done that. Mm-hmm. He's really shown that, you know, he's got this confidence, and you might have to scale back when, you know, right now he's taking that opportunity. You like the aggression, but I like the fact that he's willing to take those chances. He's willing to lean in and protect his teammates. So that's an Adam Foote sequence if I've ever seen one.
And you know what we always see when a player fights, the bench gets up. But one thing that has been very evident, you talk to some guys around the team too, and you know, you kind of watch how the veterans are reacting to DPD. It says quite a bit that they're already kind of including him in pretty much everything with the team. And I had somebody who was a former player tell me that you even see stuff during warmups with how they include him with certain things already. Like, he's already like one of the guys with the team. It says quite a bit when he's already being revered somewhat by the veterans on the squad.
Totally. And, you know, even when they're walking into the rink, guys, you know, Marcus Pettersson, Kevin Lankinen, and it's usually Elias Pettersson. There's a trio. There's a veteran group that walks in with them. So they've got their kind of their sequence going on and their kind of their routine going on. But there's, you know, there's the old saying, it's not, you know, it's honest work. You know, it's not pretty, but it's honest work, right? And that's exactly what's going on with Elias Pettersson. Like, these are areas of the ice that are not easy to play in. When he's dominating and when he's able to throw his weight around a little bit, that gets the respect of veterans. And remember, we're not talking about him lining up against other rookies. He does not discriminate against who he's lining up and flooring, guys. Like, we're talking about veteran players, hard-nosed players like Logan O'Connor, guys that have been in this league for a long time, like Tanner Pearson, much heavier guys and tougher guys in scrums after the whistle, between the whistles.
Mikko Rantanen. So
exactly, right? Yeah. We're not talking about lining up Nazem Kadri, who's one of the most nastiest guys in the league, who's lined up many players in his own career. So, you know, when you do that, you definitely get noticed. And I would even say, going back to that Kadri hit, the biggest tell for me on that play was, Connor Zary goes after Elias Pettersson, but you know who didn't go after Pettersson? Nazem Kadri. Where that's a player that's saying, hey man, you lined me up, that's a fair and square hit, I'm not even going to try to retaliate. That builds credibility within your own room to say this guy's willing to step up, and the veterans in the room will take notice of that. They're saying, hey, this guy's not scared to play, but he's playing the right way too, where, you know, he's not taking unnecessary chances, boys. He's playing the game the right way.
I you mentioned Ratu, and I do want to bring him up. It's someone I'm going to talk about a lot throughout the course of this postgame show, but I want to get your thoughts on it, because it's all these little stuff that actually has big impact. Like, he doesn't get an assist on the Sherwood goal, but his movement plays a big role on it. He gets an assist on the Joshua goal, but he wins a faceoff. And it's showing up all over the place right now, Randy.
For sure, there's a real confidence there. And, you know, both of those plays, you're right, he wins the drawback, forward, simple off the glass and out, and he hits Dakota Joshua in stride. But that winning the draw, so vital to that play. The other play where he ends up winning the draw and ends up, you know, playing a key role there, like, he wins the draw, which is great, but he also gets a deflection on the puck as Pettersson shoots it from the point. And what that does is that changes the direction ever so slightly, where Mackenzie Blackwood, you know, can't control the rebound. He has that last change of direction, and it just handcuffs him enough where you're not able to absorb the puck, you're not sure where it's going, and that creates the rebound for Dakota Joshua. So, you know, when you're winning draws, and he's at 67% tonight. He's a guy that's near, 60% on the season. He's showing that he is able to win those important draws, even in a game against the Dallas Stars where he wasn't dominating in the faceoff circle. The most important draws during the game, he won those and got his team back in that game. So I think there's the little things. Of course, winning the draw in your own zone, winning the draw in the offensive zone. But I love the way on that goal by Dakota Joshua where he just moves to the center of the ice, gets a little bit of a touch on the puck, and, you know, you're essentially, you get enough of a touch there where you're happy to just kind of get a little change of direction, and that sets up Dakota Joshua perfectly.
Well, and as far as some of the veterans too, right? Like the way that they played in this game, and the one guy that was really good between the pipes was Kevin Lankinen, who was so good to begin the year for the Canucks, and then maybe was overplayed, had some injury issues after the Four Nations. His game really fell off, but tonight was one of his better performances. And as far as somebody trying to build up a little bit more confidence heading into the offseason and reminding everybody he can flash that form, it was good to see Lankinen get back to that level tonight.
Yeah, the word I think of when I think of Lankinen's game tonight, guys, was just rock solid, right? Like, he was so strong on basically the opening of the game all the way till the end. And, you know, there's the partial breakaway for Miles Wood early on in this game. He makes a save there. There was another one where Lekkinen has a chance and Makar sets him up. Makar's attacking from the right-hand side, cuts back to the left, and a comfortable save there. You even saw a little bit later on, in the second period, where Natchez had a great chance on the left-hand side and a blocker save after a Kiefer Sherwood giveaway, and it keeps the game 2-0 at that point. In the third period, another opportunity for Lekkinen. I just thought this was a confident performance where maybe the last couple of games we haven't seen, you know, Kevin Lankinen provide his team with that confidence. Sometimes, you know, the last few, it's been when you needed that save, maybe he wasn't able to provide it. Maybe he wasn't able to keep his team in games or give them that confidence boosting save that they needed. Today, he provided it throughout the game, whether it was 1-0, whether it was 2-0, he was there to say, hey, I got your back. And I think with Kevin Lankinen, and also, you know, we were talking about it during the game, first time he's ever beaten Colorado, even though he's played most of his career in the Central Division. So, you know, it was a well-earned victory for him, picking up 31 saves.
The other guy that we're going to be chatting about tonight is Kiefer Sherwood, 19 goals now on the season. And look, he's made a name for himself this season in Vancouver with all the hits. Didn't have one today. A very rare night for Kiefer Sherwood. But nevertheless,
slacker,
it's a
huh?
goal. It's 19 goals. But what a find and what a season for him.
Yeah, he's officially a 40-point player in the NHL now too, which, remember, when he was signed by the Vancouver Canucks, it was a value bet. It was a recommendation by Quinn Hughes, and now you've got a guy that's on the cusp of scoring 20 goals. He's a 40-point player. He's the NHL's hits king, and he provides that next level of effort on certain nights where you're trying to, you know, we say it, drag your teammates into the fight. I don't know if they needed that so much, but in the second period, where, you know, the first period they had two power play opportunities, but Colorado still had the better chances early in that second period. Sherwood had jump, right? And that Jake DeBrusk goal, guys, you know, that move he makes to set up DeBrusk, that's a high-skill play. He's up to 21 assists this season, and probably the most underrated part of his game. Even before, you know, that pass to DeBrusk, there was an assist he makes to Dakota Joshua on that shift. And it's just a behind the net. It's kind of like a little bit of deception to his pass. And Batch and I were talking about that right after that to say, hey, you know, underrated playmaker, good pass there. And mere seconds later, he makes that unbelievable play, go forehand, backhand. And I've loved his game throughout the season. I think he's really the engine of this team emotionally when he's able to kind of change, of course, you know, the emotion in the game and the momentum. But I think his playmaking is very, very underrated.
Just really quickly, it's actually his first hitless game of the season. His lowest
wow.
has been 2. All season, and here we are. He finally had a hitless game, but he's broken the record. He can relax on that one a little bit.
Yeah, he won't hit 500 hits. That's fine, but he's picking up other landmarks, you could say milestones for him as well when it comes to points and goals.
It's so funny that you have to say he won't get to 500. Like,
which is wild.
It's a staggering
right?
amount of hits. 446 so far this year for Kiefer Sherwood.
Not bad for what he's making, right? This is why Vancouver, and I think this management group, will always be enticing for free agents coming to Vancouver, because you have players like Dakota Joshua who came to Vancouver. They proved what they could do. Pugh Suter, they proved what they could do. Kiefer Sherwood, he's proving what he can do. But there's going to be, you know, I think other players in free agency, whether they're on the high end or in the middle six, where you look at these examples to say, all right, hey, they got an opportunity there. If I go there, I might be able to turn into maybe a 20 or 24 goal scorer like Pugh Suter.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll see ultimately what happens here this offseason. But when we look at where the Canucks kind of find themselves and what they need to do, it's going to be fascinating because we heard, you know, what Brock Besser said today when speaking to Ian McIntyre, or at least the article that came out today about he thinks it's unlikely he comes back to Vancouver. So, you know, whether it's Suter, whether it's Besser, how these guys play down the stretch, it may not matter. So ultimately, it does come down to these young guys. And before we let you go here, Randeep, I mean, Canucks have three games to go. There's one coming up on Saturday against Minnesota, the last game, regular season game of Marc-Andre Fleury's career potentially coming up. But what are you kind of looking at here for the final three games? Is it just to see how the young guys progress?
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, when you talk about that Minnesota game, briefly on Marc-Andre Fleury, they have a back-to-back. They play on Friday and then Saturday. So it might be a Marc-Andre Fleury game on the 12th. But for the Vancouver Canucks the rest of the way here, you're looking at the young players and you're looking at some of these guys, whether it's Carlson, whether it's Ratu, Mancini, Elias Pettersson, just showing you that a little bit more. You want to build that resume out. You want to build that sample size to say, can you make a lasting impression? And I understand the end of the year, sometimes we can overvalue it. But for a young player, you want to set up yourself for training camp to say, the last time you saw me, I impressed you. And head into your off-season program with that confidence. So, like right now, Ratu, if he can focus on his skating in the off-season and the other items that, of course, the coaching staff is going to focus on with him, you know, you got to have in your mind as a player, how do I crack this bottom six? How am I the third or fourth line center of this team? For Elias Pettersson, you could say there's a logjam on the left-hand side, but, you know, you want to put yourself in that conversation of being a day one starter for this team. For Linus Karlsson, how do you work yourself into that fourth line role consistently enough? And Mancini as well on the right hand side. So I think the rest of the way here for me is no doubt zeroing in on those guys and seeing how they can set themselves up for training camp.
I know there's a source of frustration, Randeep, when a team gets the eliminated sign next to them and they pick a point, and you know, fans are trying to find a win in anything, and it's okay, it's hurting the draft position and all that. But when you see the committed performance like you did today, what does that say to you about the group?
Well, okay, when it comes to draft picks, you know, I think it's also important to consider the picks you've made and how they're developing, right? Like, this is an important thing. You've got players that you were acquiring, whether it was, you know, the first round of the draft or the second round of the draft. You want to see them develop. You want to see them play meaningful games. And yes, if the Vancouver Canucks were at the bottom of the rankings and they were losing percentages, I can understand that frustration, but they're not in that group. So, you know, there's going to be that, you know, that whatever it's the, you know, 14, 15, 16 range, whatever it may be, they're going to be in that range. I think, you know, looking internally to say, are you in a position to see something from a player that's getting an opportunity, and can you build on it? Can you build on that for next year? There's real value in that, right? For the coaching staff to get reps. And remember, some of these guys were playing high-pressure moments. You know, we can say this Colorado game was, you know, in a way a meaningless game because they're not fighting for the playoffs. But how about the games before this? Like, Ratu was playing in those games. Carlson was playing in those games. Mancini, Elias Pettersson. So I think it's important for focus on the players you've acquired, the young players via trade, like Ratu and like Mancini, or your own guys like Carlson, of course, was acquired through a trade as well, but or Elias Pettersson, who you selected, and making sure that you develop. Of course, the first round of the draft is important, but where they sit right now, you know, we'll see. And, you know, talk to a lot of analysts, of course, in this draft, that range is maybe not the strongest to begin with, so compared to previous drafts. So I'd focus on what you have in house right now and building on that.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see kind of what happens and the decisions the Canucks have to make, but some young players that are kind of getting through here at the very least. But Randeep, great stuff as always, man, and we look forward to chatting with you again very soon. Only three games left on the campaign.
That's right, boys. See you up, and see you at Rogers Arena next time.
You got it. That is Randeep Janda, and that was your game review. Need more power and efficiency in your lineup? Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Sport with rates from 2.49%. Visit bchonda.ca. And on that sentiment, Bic, Corey from GP says, now the Canucks decide to play hockey and win games when they're eliminated from the playoffs, as you were mentioning. A lot of thoughts like that.
Yeah.
Canucks winning at the wrong time. Now, some at least are liking what they're seeing. Rob from New West says, great effort and win by the Canucks. It is bittersweet, though. They are a better team than the standing show. It's a shame this should be in the playoffs. And Jake says, disappointed that the Canucks are not in the playoffs, but at least we're looking at some of the young upcoming talent and future looks bright. Just have to sort out number 40 and a few other centers for this team.
Yeah, and I think I just agree with the overall sentiment. It's like there's so many bodies out of the lineup, sad. If this is all the peak guys and they ruin the draft position, yeah, okay, I can understand the frustrations. But we're talking about some young players here in the lineup with a bunch of bodies missing. Not everyone's healthy and earning these results, too. I like the committed performance tonight.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, obviously, when you're not making the playoffs, it's best for you to get the best pick possible. But if guys play hard and they work hard and they win,
that doesn't mean this isn't valuable.
Yeah, for those individuals, right?
Yes.
So it is what it is, right? But I do see a lot of people acknowledging the effort, acknowledging how the young guys are playing. Big Daddy in the Grove says, no pressure and another solid effort. Optimistic looking for next season. Young players played well. That's Big Daddy in the Grove. So we are getting some some positive messages to the Dunbar Lumber text inbox that are kind of mixed in with some of the, I can't believe we're winning hockey games, ruining the draft position messages.
We always use the word pride. Can fans take pride in a result or anything like that or the efforts? And I do think you can come away with this. I get the frustrations. It's all the 50 years and everything like that. I totally get it. It's very Canucky. But in isolated moments, looking at this one tonight, I do think you can look at this with a sense of pride and say, like Elias Pettersson, that's really encouraging. Aturatu, that's really encouraging. And there are things you can take out of this and feel better about what's to come.
We'll dive deeper into all those individual players' games and get some of your thoughts in. But what else are you seeing on the text inbox before we hit the break here, Bick?
650. Just a lot of thoughts on DPD here. Aside from the contract that's going to age terribly, the best part about not re-signing Big Zadorov is the emergence of Big D, Big Z instead of Big D. That's OP from Fleetwood.
It's a good point. At the same time, they still traded for Marcus Pettersson, who's a left-handed defenseman.
Correct.
So there's still room there for. But I get the point that OP is making.
And Rod and Fleetwood, because we've had the conversation before of levers that they can pull in ways to get better, and is the surplus on left-handed defense, and is DPD a very encouraging and tantalizing prospect to move to go get the impact players you're looking for? Rod from Fleetwood, as I've texted before, DPD is the PD we should keep. So there's an endorsement to retain Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, Renfrew Marco says real PD is how he calls DPD.
You know what? Okay, shout out to Renfrew Marco with that text, because I wanted to bring this up at some point.
Okay.
When you fight like that and you drop bodies like he's been doing recently here, is Junior an applicable nickname? Like, I get he's the young one of the PDs.
Well, I mean, it can be. I mean, there are a lot of guys who've been named Junior that are like very good athletes.
I just kind of think like he's not playing like a junior, he's playing like a senior.
I get it. Like Ken Griffey Jr. Did you ever think of, like, you know?
No, but his dad was on the team.
Now
that makes sense.
But I mean, that's his name too, Junior.
Yeah.
But yes, I get what you're saying. I'd have no problem.
I kind of like real PD. That's nice. But text in other options for a nickname.
Yeah. Well, that's like one of those, like, they call it, like, the big guy tiny.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, all right. So much for being.
But he's not playing like a junior,
that's what
man.
I'm saying.
He's got big paws on him already.
He certainly does. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll take more of your texts and your phone calls, 604-280-0650. Your toll free, 1-888-275-0650. But let's take a call before we hit the break, because we have Manny from Denver on the line, and we'd love to get to fans that were at the game, especially in away rinks. Manny, what's going on? What are your thoughts here after a 4-1 win in Colorado?
Absolutely solid performance by the boys. It was one of those games that the point I feel just didn't come off the gas pedal. Anytime Makar and Taze, I could see they're trying to rally up the team, they're just shutting it down. Marcus Pettersson was throwing the body. Sherwood just been doing what he's doing all season. I know there's a lot of unhappy Canucks fans, but I see things like that and EPD doing what he's doing, and Aturati, I do have faith in this team, and I'm just happy I'm leaving another away arena with the W, Sat and Vic.
I love it. Manny, man, we got to get you. You mentioned last game that you're going to go Colorado. Like, you have to get in with the Canucks next year. And
someone's
got to
fund this.
Yeah.
Why are we not funding this?
This is Arena 17, and I got to go to the drawing board and see what my record is. But it's that, Vic. Maybe you guys can put in a word for the Canucks management to get me on board, okay?
There we go. No kidding. Guys, have to get you some home games as well. Manny, great stuff, man. Get home safe.
I appreciate you guys. Thanks for taking the call.
That is Manny calling in from Denver. Love it.
We got Manny on the plane before weekend.
No kidding. I love it, though. Keep sending Manny. Keep sending Manny. We'll get Manny to the games. And what if we got Manny on the road earlier in the season? Or in home games?
Well,
the
home games, yeah, the home games at the beginning part of the season. Not necessarily the road games.
Yeah. Somebody texts in and says, Junior is a term of endearment.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying.
Biggest to impress. He's like, this is a man.
Yeah. It's a man. He wears 25.
That's how he feels. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line. We'll get to more of your reaction. We'll hear from the head coach and Canuck players, and hopefully iMac from Denver as well, after a 4-1 win against the Avalanche. Canucks sweep the season series against the Avs. In a season they're not making the playoffs. That's just wild. It's one of those years, man. Anyways, keep your thoughts coming in. We'll get to more of it. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With an Abbotsford team that's one of the best in the Pacific. Shot for the right point in on Lankin, and he makes the save. Elias Pettersson's into it in front of the goal with Logan O'Connor, and off come the gloves. Pettersson throwing hard right hands. O'Connor wasn't ready for it. He's trying to land rights. Pettersson pushes him up against the end glass. They're still both flailing wildly. Pettersson comes around with the right hand. O'Connor responds in kind. They got a hold of each other and fall to the ice together. As the Canucks slam their sticks on the ice in support of their young teammate Elias Pettersson. Throwing down with Logan O'Connor in the Vancouver zone.
That snarl per 60 is really high for Elias Pettersson. There was no hesitation as the Canucks bench is applauding number 25. Thrown down with a veteran in Logan O'Connor. And this happens right in front of the net. O'Connor didn't like the fact that shoulder to shoulder from Pettersson, and the two 25s go at it, and there's no hesitation as the gloves come off. Overhand rights. I'm not going to lie. I don't think his form is all that great. He's not closing that fist. But he certainly threw some punches that made an impact.
DPD is not afraid. Throws the gloves. Fights Logan O'Connor. Canucks win 4-1 over the Avalanche. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. It's Sat and Bick on Sportsnet 650. A lot of reaction on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And, you know, a lot of love going to DPD. KP Golfer Girl just says, DPD. So you get a lot of that. A lot of fans are fired up. Chris in Maple Ridge says, how can any fan... we are seeing incremental baby steps every game from the kids. How can any fan be discouraged with what they are learning, feeling, seeing, and most importantly, what they need to work on in the off season? So a lot of fans excited what they're seeing from the young guys, specifically DPD, who threw the gloves and showed some courage and bravery tonight.
I was saying he's not playing like a junior, so if there's other nickname suggestions, maybe we take him here. 650-650. And someone texted in, he's like, he's junior because he's the youngest one. I get it. Yeah, no. I'm just saying he's not playing like a junior.
Bick understands the reasons why he's called junior.
This one, I suggest hard PD, firm PD, and soft PD. Like they're not tofu, guys. Okay?
Hard, firm, soft PDs. There's so many. I mean, yeah.
There's if he's junior PD, who's senior PD? Is it EP40? Because that tracks. He's played like a senior all season.
Okay, all right. I mean, listen, the guy's not playing. He's injured.
Jake has texted in with, how about calling him Heavy P?
Heavy P?
That's pretty good.
Heavy P, all right.
Heavy P. Heavy D, man.
Heavy D, Heavy P, all right. Sure. Yeah.
Were you a big...
Heavy D fan?
Yeah.
There's some tracks.
That's like...
a few Heavy D. That's like my...
90s, late 80s, 90s, right?
Yeah. There's a few Heavy D tracks, for sure. I mean, Heavy D, Too Short. Remember how big Too Short used to be back in the day?
Huge.
Huge.
Anyways, huge.
We'll leave it at that. A lot of reaction and questions coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to your questions and comments here as the show goes on, and we are going to hear from the Canucks head coach as well. Yeah.
By the way, update.
Okay, yes.
Elsewhere.
Yes.
Out of town scoreboard, but not even out of league scoreboard. The Frozen Four. BU is just tallied an empty netter. So it's 3-1. So they are, I don't want to say it's over because we just saw a three-goal comeback the other day.
With under a minute to go.
They are tracking to be in the final of the Frozen Four.
Yeah.
So that Tom Molander
is, he's playing on the
12th. One more game, potentially.
So you'd be playing on the 12th, and that means the earliest you could be available to the Canucks would be the 14th or the 16th for games, that is.
And so it'll be a very small cameo.
Yeah. But he is going to the Frozen Four final, it looks like, and Penn State just took a penalty as well. So it does not look good for Penn State. So looks like BU is going to be through here. So no Tom Molander signing quite yet. It won't be during the weekend, maybe after the weekend, and we'll see ultimately how it goes. But yeah, go BU. Aiden Celebrini, a couple of Canuck prospects. And yeah, you know, last year they had some pretty key players. They had Max and Celebrini on the team. They had Lane Hudson on the team. Both guys are now vying for the Calder Trophy. So quite the program at BU. And now the Hudson brothers are there too, the younger brothers, and they're also doing really good things. And they have a Jack Hughes as well. How loaded is this? They have all the Hudsons. They have a Hughes. It's not. He's not related to the Quinn, Jack Hughes, Luke Hughes trifecta brotherhood. But
is he Junior Hughes then? Hughes Junior.
He's Junior. It's kind of like the Pettersons, right? The Pettersi. They're not related.
The Pettersi. Yeah.
Keith, the water guy, says, "I've been screaming for 5 years that Pettersson plays with no heart. Now that he's out, the team is all heart." And you know, I know it's Pettersson has had a really disappointing season. And it's fair to criticize. I mean, he's getting a lot of it. And Keith, to his point, has been texting in for years, telling us
like consistent texter
has not liked Pettersson and has been saying he's not going to be a player and all that. So he feels like he's called it, and in many ways has, as far as how his game has gone this year. Their win percentage is worse without Pettersson. I think people should know that. Just so you know, like they're about 550 with Pettersson in the lineup this season, and they're, I think, smack dab at 500 with Pettersson out of the lineup.
Does that include today's win?
Maybe slightly above 500, but it's like they're not winning more. Mm-hmm. You can feel like they have more heart. You can like whatever, but facts only here. They're not winning more without Pettersson in the lineup. Just want to clarify that for everybody saying they're better without Pettersson.
I think they're 5-3-1 since Pettersson has been out of the lineup this last stint here.
Yeah.
So again, slightly above 500,
but also if you go back to the other games this year he missed, if you look at the totality of games he's missed,
the most recent stretch of 9 games, that's 5-3,
but it's also 9 games.
Yeah,
small sample. And how often have we seen late season and garbage time winning games producing points? Like, guys, we've seen this before. Just be careful with how much you point it and say, scoreboard telling us what's going on. That's all. But yes, anything else you're seeing on the text inbox before we get to coach here, Bick?
Well, one other one from Vikingstad on Twitter says, what's going on here? Is this just meaningless games bump, or is Ratu really starting to come around? 7 points in the last 8 games here for Ratu. I like the acquisition when it happened. I just thought there was a lot of upside to this guy's game. He went through the draft process, and the year, like going into the draft year, you were doing prospect shows then. Like going into that draft year, he was regarded as like top 10, top 15.
Yeah.
And the stock really took a bit of a hit, and he ended up going in the second round, obviously. But there's just a natural sense and feel to his game. Mm-hmm. It's really just about a physical trait and the skating. And now you're seeing some point production. We're obviously all enamored by the face-off wins, and that stuff translates really easily. That at its baseline, like, he will have a career just because he's excellent at face-offs.
Yeah.
And he's smart enough to get around the ice. Like, there's guys in the league that have hung around in the league just because they are excellent at face-offs. Like Luke Glendening continues to get contracts because he can win face-offs. Cody Eakin, you know, he keeps getting like 2-year, 1-year deals. He's excellent at face-offs. So there's guys that can just hang around just because of that. But you see other just like functionality in his game. And we'll get to the goals breakdown later, but he played a huge role in the Sherwood goal.
Yeah, massive. And there's a lot of things to like about what he brings. And again, the quickness is going to be something, but we'll talk about the goal and also that if you can think fast, process, and kind of be like Suter in that sense, you can make up for some of that lack of pace and ultimately just make effective plays. And this was a night where he did make a lot of effective plays. Ratu did.
By the way, the game is officially over. BU now into the Final Four.
BU is into the final.
In the finals.
Yeah, so they're going into the final. So Tom Molander lives to fight one more night for the NCAA crown in the Frozen Four. All right, we are going to get to more of your text coming up in a bit here, but let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Well, Rick, earlier today, Brock had talked about just wanting to finish these last four games strong and sticking to the team identity. Is that what you saw tonight?
Yeah, I think it was a really good effort. A lot of good stuff from some individuals, I thought. Thought the team played really well. I liked our game. I liked our second period. I think it really not backing off after the first was a key for us.
Defenseman Elias Pettersson getting his very first fight. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, he handled himself very well. He's when a guy can do that every once in a while, you know, people will keep their head up. So it's good. He's a big man, and he's always 20 years old. So yeah, really impressed with that.
Message to the team once you met after being eliminated last night and you got these four games, what was your message?
Yeah, I, you know, the message is like we can't get into what ifs and what happened, and that's for another discussion. For me, I keep saying there's a lot of people watching us. You know, the effort's there. Continue to give the effort. We're going to try to play some guys in certain situations. There's certain, you know, guys that play well for them. I think they deserve to keep playing too. You know, there's some guys that can get 20 goals, which is nice. So, but you got to still play the right way, and I thought we were playing the right way.
Dakota Joshua.
Yeah, continue. I thought the line was really good. I thought that line's been since I put them together. They've been really consistent the last bunch of games I played them together. Dakota's this is big for Dakota. I think if he can have some strong games down the stretch, give him some confidence going into the summer, work on some things, and for mentally for him to recharge himself again, because you know when he plays like that, you know, he's a difference maker, a big guy that can, you know, that can hold on to pucks that scores around the net. Those are hard to find. So he's a guy that when he does that, he's a really effective force.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. Proudly Canadian-owned and operated since 1971. Visit any of their three locations and talk to their in-house design consultants or visit them online at mytiletown.ca. And, you know, he obviously had a lot of praise for this team, said he liked their game, didn't back off, and had a really good effort. But on DPD, of course, anytime the coach pauses for a moment, to collect himself almost before giving some praise, you could tell that he's very impressed by DPD. Very proud head coach there to see the young man stand up for himself and say that, you know, he's a big, heavy guy. And when he plays like that, it, you know, it forces other players to keep their heads up.
And doing it, you know, age checked him there. It's like, yeah. It's a young guy doing this. And, you know, with the way Rick Tocchet talks about the game and thinks about, like, he wants guys that are battlers, obviously. And, you know, we've chatted about ways that this team can improve and all these things. Is DPD someone you dangle out there as bait to improve the top six? If Rick Tocchet's back next year and he has say in things that he wants, I imagine part of it is like, I think I might need a guy like this. And this is something that we can grow with. And I use the term, he's got young paws. The body will fill out and those paws will become pretty heavy. And I imagine this is something that Rick Tocchet like wants to be able to work with. And it'll just be fascinating how the off-season discussions, because it's getting harder to make a claim that, hey, that this is the lever that they should pull to try to improve, that it should come by way of Elias Pettersson, that he might be more valuable to the team than he is on the trade market.
He might very well be. I mean, when you look at the things he can do and how rare it is, we can talk about, we've broken it down, right? If you look at the surplus on the left side, that would be the one that would make more sense logically, as far as you have some excess, you're talking about third pair, would that be the one you feel is most expendable? But just because he's most expendable, potentially based on position, doesn't mean he may not end up being the most valuable. And if he's the most valuable, then you kind of hold on to him. And it's going to be fascinating because we talk about this all the time. If you are going to be aggressive and go and get somebody via trade, you're going to have to trade something of value.
Each game, I know we've chatted about this a lot over the past 2 weeks. And, you know, you mentioned to me, it's like, I don't know, I think he's like a first-round value. And I was like, I still feel like second. I'm conceding quickly on all those. I'm just like, this guy will be really, really attractive. And you mentioned just that rare style, right? Part of the reasons people wanted Zadorov long-term here is there's not a lot of players that play this way.
Yeah.
We're seeing more and more of the Quinn Hughes types. That's more the natural number one style D-man. Gone are the days of Chris Pronger or Darian Hatcher. They're not totally alike, but the big, burly types. And so everyone's trying to chase that McCarr, Hughes-type players because you need five guys contributing on the ice and offensively, and you need mobile players on the back end. Well, now what's going to happen is you're also going to need mobile big guys. And Elias Pettersson kind of fits that mold, who plays with a rugged physicality. It's just no longer your number one guy, but you're going to need it at some point. And if the league is getting smaller, the guys that play with physicality have more and more value. And he's making it a very, very interesting conversation. And he's still getting a lot of offensive zone starts. So we're not seeing like the true, you know, toughs for Elias Pettersson, but nevertheless, he's doing a lot of good things to showcase an ability that he should get tougher environments moving forward.
Yeah, and I think when we look at also his ability to play the right side, like tonight, spent a lot of time with Hughes. Now he played with a few different guys, right? But he spent a lot of time playing with Quinn Hughes, and he's showing positional versatility. Like, I like Mancini, what I've seen from him, but to me, like, DPD's clears him. I'd rather have DPD plays offside than have Mancini in, for instance, right? So even if it comes back to the positional thing, is DPD almost too valuable?
Oh, man, it is. Yeah, like, he's adding things to his game. Like,
I think for
next season, I might be more interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, so Irfan and Maple Ridge asked the question about, do you think he thinks there's top four potential there? Do you see that in DPD? Top four potential?
Kind of.
And if you're top four physical D-man?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're worth a lot.
There's potential. I don't know if it gets maximized, but there's potential there, certainly.
Yeah.
To make an honest assessment about that, you really need to see PK minutes. You really need to see a lot of defensive zone starts. So that's still some distance away. But like from physical traits, yeah, it's there.
Yeah.
It's absolutely there.
He has it. I mean, Tyler says, I know it's a small sample, but Junior is going to slowly get that consequence tag. May make a player think twice before trying to do something stupid on a player like Quinn or forwards. And that's kind of something that, Talk alluded to kind of a little bit, that you think twice around him. And he certainly makes people feel that way. And this Canucks team needs toughness. We talk about it all the time. And here's a homegrown guy who's big, physical, and brings all those elements. And, you know, I get it. It's something that you don't want to give up very easily. We'll take more of your texts, but let's go back to the phone boards. Let's go to our friend Jake in Langley. Jake, what's going on, man? What do you have for us tonight?
Can we for the deep Sportsnet 650 show for the evening? Because I just want to talk about this kid. He's 20 years old. I just can't believe he's 20 years old and what he's doing for the confidence and the tenacity, the physicality, just the fact that he's in their faces. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a star player or if it's a fourth liner, he's right in there talking crap, hitting people. It's like he has no fear whatsoever. And the guy is 20 years old. I swear, I will legitimately cry as an adult if they trade this guy this offseason. Like, I just cannot fathom them actually going to do that. So I'm just going to pretend that there's no chance it's going to happen, because this guy he's 20 years old. And he's that good already. He's been everything we've possibly had and more. He reminds me of Matthias Olin, man. Like, it's almost like a pure clone of Matthias Olin. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to say, guys. Sure.
Hey, appreciate it, Jake. And, yeah, we see a lot of the Olin takes coming. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about it on the show, too. See a lot of elements of it. And I get the whole Swedish thing. I saw somebody mention on social media, too. Are we sure he's Swedish? But it's like, I know we get so caught up on Canadian players, American players, mm-hmm. like the types of players. Just give me players that are physical and tough and care. Like, honestly,
yeah.
I don't care where you come from. Just bring it, you know? And that's how I view with a lot of these guys. And DPD brings it in a massive, massive way. What else are you seeing on the text inbox here, Bix? 650, 650. A lot of reaction.
Yeah. This one from Sad Steve. It's infuriating that everyone can see a good player like DPD. And you folks start talking about what we can trade him for. Aren't we supposed to keep good players and get rid of the bad ones? Yes, but this team does need top six talent. And you can't just assume, like, oh, let's trade the bad players to go get the good players.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, everyone says go and trade for somebody. Well, how are you going to get somebody good?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but, packaging together, Nils Höglander and you know, whatever else you want to put together, it's not going to move the needle like that. You know, that's just the reality.
Yeah. Tommy the Banker texts in, Willander and Junior, right? Like, is that a pairing down the road? Like, assuming both guys hit a certain threshold of their potential, man, like that feels like it's going to be a really difficult pairing to go up against. And what a benefit that would be for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and that's the point. Like, getting rid of bad ones, sure.
Necessary task, but that doesn't mean you're going to get...
You're not getting rid of bad ones and getting good players back in return. And I'm not saying they should trade DPD.
No.
We're just talking about... And if anything, we're responding to people texting in and saying, don't trade DPD. And we're talking about, yeah, for sure.
All right. 650. Mike and Strathcona. We're still winning that Corey Schneider-Horvat trade. Then the Horvat trade for Ratu and the pick we turned into Hronek. So the trade tree extends long. Rick Tocchet also shouting out the Ratu line that they've been really consistent and, you know, referencing that it's big here for Dakota Joshua. 6 points in his last 10 games now for Dakota Joshua. And we chatted a lot during the course of the season that, you know, this is always going to be a lost season for Joshua. That, like, best case scenario, he reclaims where he was last season rather than a growth season. And you could say, like, in this last little stretch here, maybe starting to get back to the pace where he was at last year.
So last year he had 32 points in 63 games, almost smack dab at a half a point per game. So if he played a full season, he would have scored just over 20 goals and had just about 40 points, maybe 41 points on the campaign. So 6 points in his last 10 games puts him on a similar pace.
Mm-hmm.
Is that him finding the same level at the end of the season? And that's what we were talking about. If you could, and this is, again, unfortunate that this team isn't making the postseason, because if you get him playing his best going into the playoffs, that's what you were hoping for. And that's not to say his game is back, but you're seeing a lot of elements for it. And I'm not sure I buy that this end of season is important for any of the veterans outside of the guys padding their stats. And again, Pat, you're saying, even talking alluded to that, saying some guys can get 20 goals, like Sherwood, mm-hmm. who got his 19th here tonight. But the veteran who could truly benefit from these games is Dakota Joshua. Like, that's the one guy, mm-hmm. because of everything he's gone through, that every rep he gets by the end of the season is beneficial to him in long term.
There's a financial impact, obviously, to some guys. And I actually really like that Talk acknowledges that. You want to keep getting buy-in and belief from players. Try to take care of your guys and give them the opportunities to go get those markers.
But
players will recognize that stuff.
For sure. And that's also, you're right, players on the team recognize it. But it's also one of those things that worry gets around. It's like, sure, I ask you to buy in, and then, hey, I'll give you your opportunities later because you've done everything I've asked you to do, right?
That stuff tracks, and that stuff absolutely matters. And we've gotten text here of, like, is this still a desirable destination with what's happened with Besser? And you see the mm-hmm. conversations that happens. I think when you
it's hear a fair question.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you hear statements like that from Tocchet, and you know, as much as we can talk about, you know, strategies for Rick Tocchet, the respect for the game and being a former player for it and an ambassador at the level that he is, like, doing this stuff really does have an impact. And Bobby from the Docs did mention that that question of, like, how management has treated certain players. And
He wants to get rid of Alvin and Rutherford. And we got a lot of those texts throughout the day today saying get rid of management, they're the ones to blame, and they're getting a lot of the criticism here. But this is why, like, when we talk about coaches at the end of a season, forget management for a moment, but just as far as, like, how they approach things and this whole notion of tanking and losing games, it's not that simple. It's not a video game. You know, that's why, like, you know, some people are like, you guys don't acknowledge the tanking enough. It's like, because it's academic. You know, why acknowledge an academic point that they're not going to follow through on? Because there are so many other factors that go on that a coach considers. And we're talking about humans, relationships, and so many other things that go into it, that it's not as simple as just be like, yeah, give this kid 20 minutes, sit this guy out, we'll do our best to lose this hockey game. It just doesn't work that way, you know? And I think, you know, it was a good thing to kind of bring up there on Talk and giving those guys an opportunity to get those milestones this season. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get more of them on the other side. We'll hear from more Canuck players, break the goals down, get to IMAC on the Canuck Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canuck, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canuck Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and postgame on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650,
and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks with a face-off of the Colorado zone. Marcus Pettersson, heavy drive from the line, stopped by Blackwood. Rebound, they score! Dakota Joshua in front, fires it into the open net. And the Canucks have their two-goal lead back again. It's 3-1.
I thought the line was really good. I thought that line's been, since I put them together, they've been really consistent the last bunch of games I played them together. Dakota's this is big for Dakota. I think if he can have some strong games down the stretch, give him some confidence going into the summer, work on some things, and for mentally for him to recharge himself again, because you know when he plays like that, you know he's a difference maker, a big guy that can hold on to pucks that scores around the net. Those are hard to find. So he's a guy that when he does that, he's a really effective force.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. After a 4-1 win over the Colorado Avalanche, Canucks sweep the season series against the Avs. Crazy season. 87 points on the campaign, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. A lot of reaction on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650, 650. And a Swedish player is getting some love. Blue Line Bar Down says, it's a hard pill to swallow. Per capita, Swedish players are the best hockey players. Stats support it. The stats just don't account for championship and 100 years of metrics. They're emerging late like the Americans did. They're extremely talented. Blue Line Bar Down. And Owen says, Owen says he agrees that tanking does nothing. But also Burke from Victoria says, Swedish players are soft, might be the worst take ever. Peter Forsberg, Victor Hedman, soft. I mean, come on, man. Birthplace doesn't dictate having tough physical traits. That is Burke from Victoria texting in. So the Swedish players getting some. See, not even the resident Swede needs to defend the Swedes. Had people do it for me this time.
There you go. There you go. All right. 650, 650 elsewhere. In the inbox, Corey from Grand Prairie, do they bring back Forbert next year? Or do we let the young guys take his spot? It wouldn't be a bad investment to have Forbert back as well. Yeah. Then you get like 7 or 8 credible guys all of a sudden.
And guess what always happens?
Guys get hurt.
Always happens. So having depth is big. And I think as much as all these guys look really good right now, it's an 82-game season. Mm-hmm. And it's different looking good coming in, being recalled at one point versus going through the rigors of a big year. You're going to hit walls. You're going to have issues or whatever. Having the veteran presence, I think, is good. And I think a guy that's making between 1.5, maybe 2 is perfect to bring in. And I think Forbert would be the ideal guy to come back here next year and fight for that 6-7 spot with guys on this roster for next season. I know this comes up. This one says DPD's doing incredibly well this year, but I really wish he was papered down to play in the AHL playoffs. Now, he wasn't papered down. The Canucks papered other players down. The reason they didn't do it is they feel like he doesn't need to be in the AHL anymore. That they feel like he's graduated.
It's a big endorsement, right? Yeah. That's the, hey, like, welcome to the show type move.
Pretty much. And he's physical, too, plays a heavy brand of hockey. And maybe, hey, if he's not going to play for us, like, do you want him to go and maybe get injured? You know what I mean? I think there are factors there with DPD. Plus, they have a lot of young defensemen. And if Ylander goes and joins them, too, that's another one that goes to the list. And we'll see ultimately what happens with him here, whether he's signing for this year or next year, coming here or going to Abbey. And it's one or the other, and we'll see which one it ends up being here. But they have a lot of young guys, too, already on that blue line. So if you're trying to get guys' experience, I'm okay with him not going there if you feel like he's going to be an NHL player. Mm-hmm. Like, his time in the AHL may be over outside of conditioning assignments in the future if that need would ever arise.
Yeah, it was the true call up and you're done here.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no yo-yoing.
Yeah.
It's
they're treating him like he's an NHL player. Yeah. And that point, you know, I made earlier, and I've talked to guys, and even Landon brought this point up when we were talking the other night at the game, and just by how guys are interacting with him and how he's kind of one of the guys already, they're treating him like he's a guy.
Yes.
And it's one of those things like players know, and there's a sense around the guys that he's a dude. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why he's not going to the AHL. Now, hey, you can have the point that any experience is good experience, but sometimes it's like if you graduated, like when he got called up, I remember telling people that I had heard from people with the team that they said he has nothing more to prove in the AHL.
So there you go.
Yeah. So
when you graduate, pretty,
that happens so quickly too.
When you graduate, you don't just go back to classes for fun. You get the diploma and you start going working. You don't just go like, ah. Oh! What's going on Econ 301 today? No. You're done.
Great stuff. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And we'll get to some more of them here in a couple of minutes. But let's get to the goals, because it leads us to the three stars, and it also leads us to talk about some of these young players in detail with how they went about things. And also a couple of the veterans we haven't had a chance to talk about quite yet in this game, because it's been all about guys like DPD and even Atu Ratu, and the Canucks somehow winning hockey games late in the season here. But the Canucks did take the lead, Bick, and it was... it was after a really good play by Vancouver off the rush, and Jake DeBrusk posits a Kiefer Sherwood feed, and Kiefer Sherwood just does his thing.
Yeah, it's forward up the wall. It looks like it takes a bounce off an Avalanche player, and it comes to the middle of the ice, and there was Kiefer Sherwood taking it in the neutral zone, and he's past the pinching Malinsky, who was up in that neutral zone. And he just dangles around Sam Girard and stays wide and is able to get that pass into the middle of the ice, where Malinsky has come back into the play. And DeBrusk just kind of pokes at it and gets a jousting motion.
Yeah.
A stabbing motion, and is able to get blade to puck, and it goes up and in.
Yeah, and Jake DeBrusk, his 26th goal of the season. He's now one off his career high of 27. He
scored
27 twice. Now, he did it in fewer games. It was under 70 games both times he did it. But nonetheless, he's one off his career high in goals. So we can talk about DeBrusk all we want and certain things, whether what he lacks and doesn't lack. But for $5.5 million, 26 goals, like you've earned your money.
If we said, like, hey, he's going to get his career high in goals, you'd say that's a fantastic season for Jake DeBrusk.
Yeah, and I know the hope had been even more, like, can he be even greater? But listen, to me, it's like earn your money, and then we can talk about what else you could do after that.
I'll be consistent with what I said from July to where I said now. I always felt 25 was very doable for Jake DeBrusk, and it's the type of player that I felt has enough talent to independently get 25 on his own. If he got to 35, it was going to be because we saw Elias Pettersson really bring the best of Jake DeBrusk. I got to admit, I'm actually really impressed with these 25 goals, because he's done it in the environment where Elias Pettersson's been at his worst.
Yeah.
So honestly, like, this 25 is actually more encouraging than just a standard 25.
And the thing I do like about, and he has a bit, consistency has plagued him, a lack of consistency. Mm-hmm. Goes back to Boston. We saw it at times so far this year too, right? But he scores in a variety of ways.
The pure goal scoring, like, I have zero complaints,
like,
whatsoever.
We see him shoot the puck with his wrist shot. We see him being around the net and tip pucks. We see him score dirty goals. Like, he scores net front. He scores in a variety of ways, and I like that about guys, and that shows it's good versatility, right? But good job for Jake DeBrusk getting his 26th goal of the campaign. Canucks take a 1-0 lead, and they keep things going, Bick, and they take a 2-0 lead, and now Kiefer Sherwood gets his 40th point of the campaign, 19th goal of the season, after a nice feed from Dakota Joshua. But the man that makes this happen is the man who won the faceoff in his own zone.
Yeah, Atu Ratu wins the faceoff. Forbert does the same thing he did on the previous goal, just goes up the wall, puck bounces, I think off the wall into the middle of the ice, into Dakota Joshua's path. And Ratu recognizes this from his own zone, and he's got to get on his giddy up. And he's not fleet of foot, but sheer effort and early recognition allows you to create and beat angles. Speed is the great equalizer, because you can make up ground a lot faster, obviously. But if you can read the play and anticipate and recognize moments to when to do it, you can make up the speed. And if you leave early, that's fantastic. And Ratu finds the right moment to leave. And his skating and his movement on this play, as he goes right to the net, keeps Cale Makar tethered to protecting the net.
Yeah.
And Sherwood's cutting across with Makar held wide and Joshua going wide, the space in between. Not much, but enough for someone like Sherwood to tuck into. And Joshua does nice work to get that pass there. And now Makar activates. Rather than a 2v2 and defend those two, it's 3v2. He's got to stay wide. And that's just enough for Sherwood to take a pass off the backhand, quickly switch, get a forehand, and we know he's got a good shot, and he buries this one.
Yeah, I mean, great finish by Kiefer Sherwood with that snapshot. And I saw somebody text in earlier and asked,
it was Joe in Victoria.
If it's underrated.
Is a snapshot deceptively good?
It is. Yeah. It, like, he's a deceptively good shooter. And obviously, he's not an elite goal scorer, but a lot of traits that he has, right? And that shot is very solid, but he goes to the net a lot too. But great finish from him. And on Ratu, to your point, driving the middle makes such a big difference. And, you know, I know we talked about it during the intermission, but a guy like Pew Suter is a perfect template for Ratu, as far as, here's a guy who doesn't have pace, but finds himself not trailing the play a lot, and it's making intelligent reads and doing it quickly. And if you work hard and think fast, and one thing I like about Suter, because you see this a lot through the neutral zone and going in the offensive zone, he's not the fastest guy, but he finds ways to kind of like sail around guys and go to the spots that, you know, allow him to be dangerous and forces guys to defend him. And yes, speed is great, but you also have to know what you're doing with your speed, right?
I'll take someone who plays with good angles over senseless speed.
Yeah.
In general. And Ratu plays with fantastic angles.
He has. And another solid performance from Atu. Ratu does not get an assist on that play, but if you do good things will come to you eventually. But first, it is the Colorado Avalanche getting one back. Charlie Coyle gets a shot off that hits Devon Taves and goes in, and the game is 2-1. And here's some stuff that some young guys can work on, perhaps, and some D-zone coverage, perhaps, that can be a little bit better for some of the young guys, particularly Mancini. Now,
I think this is extra nitpicky. Let's be very clear.
But we're just talking about, hey, we're talking good, the bad. Like, this is the thing with young guys. There are a lot of good things, and there are things that we see that you need to work on, because I want to bring something else up about Mancini later, but go on.
So DeBrusk pushes a puck up the wall, doesn't get out. Taves gets it, and he just throws it into the far corner. And Quinn Hughes goes to retrieve it, and he takes it and skates towards the back of the net, and he draws players with him. And to me, that's opening up space to where he wants to put it. And he does put it there. And Mancini waits to see that puck go around rather than just fill in space, be an outlet for Quinn Hughes. And that's where, does a Filip Hronek know how to get there? The chemistry of playing with Hughes often, would he know how to do that? And that quarter second decision of just waiting to see the puck rather than anticipating where the puck might go allows Colorado to keep a forecheck going. And it keeps the puck low. Eventually, Coyle, it's quick onto Quinn Hughes on the other corner. They keep the puck in the zone. They get the puck back. And eventually, just a high shot from Coyle. And there's Devon Taves in the middle of the slot tipping this puck. And they are back in it at 2-1.
Yeah. And we kind of wondered, is that the moment where Colorado's going to get back to this game and really maybe take over from that point on? And that's not really what happened. It was a 2-1 hockey game. But once we got into the third period.
Yeah. And I like that Rick Tocchet mentioned, too, that that he liked the second period, that they didn't back off after what happened in the first period. Because we mentioned there's a lot of plays where trailers were picked up in that first period, and Colorado had a lot of opportunities to create offense from that. And that kind of got shut down the rest of the way. There was obviously some moments there in the third. Logan O'Connor saved on a low high pass. Quinn Hughes kind of over collapsed on the wall and gave him space. And then Mancini mishandled a play in the neutral zone. Miles Wood jumps on it and centers a pass for Jimmy Vesey, and he gets a fantastic shot in length, and he comes up huge there. And Hronek doesn't really track Vesey in that moment. But like by and large, the things that were plaguing them in the first period didn't really translate the rest of the way. So good credit to them.
Yeah, really good stuff from them. And even the power play that happened late for Colorado was the Canucks were very aggressive on the PK. They had two of the best chances. Blueger set up Suter, Garland on a one-on-one. So strong finish to the period. And then in the third pick, and you kind of thought, okay, I thought, all right, maybe we see Colorado really push. No, it was Vancouver pushing, and they did take the 3-1 lead here.
Yeah, the Joshua goal helps take some sting out of the game as well, and it's Ratu winning an offensive zone face-off, and it's just D-to-D, Hronek to Marcus Pedersen, a one-timer shot, and it looks like it goes off Ratu, rebounds perfectly for Dakota Joshua, who scores, but also you watch Joshua in this play, you know, he cuts inside initially off the face-off to support, and it draws Devon Taves in, and then he spins around Taves to now box him out for the rebound. And it was perfectly well done. It looked like a rebounder on a free throw trying to get to a spot, and he spun off of him perfectly, and there was the rebound for him to cash that one in. And Dakota Joshua now 6 points in his last 10 games, as we mentioned, and his seventh goal of the season.
Yeah, and the Canucks also add an empty net goal, and that makes it 4-1.
Nils Höglander.
Yeah, Nils Höglander. And Connor Garland had a chance. He couldn't get the puck in, but Höglander digs it out and puts it in and gives the Canucks the 4-1 victory. And that gets us to the three stars of the game, brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. Get your mitts on your game day favorites at Angry Otter Liquor. And the third star of this game, Bick, and we kind of went back and forth. Were you letting two guys share the load here? So the third star, you know, DPD and Ratu.
Yeah, we'll do a co-stars here.
Co-stars, all right. So DPD and Ratu. DPD fought, of course. Ratu had an assist, and we talked about the good play he made on the game's second goal. Lankinen, Kevin Lankinen, who spectacular, gets your second star.
Huge moment.
Star. Kiefer Sherwood, first star of the game. One goal, one assist, 19.
Primary assist, huge goal.
And,
game-winning goal.
Game-winning goal, and he gets it. And we will continue the conversation on the other side. We'll take more of your text messages, more of your thoughts. We'll hear from Canuck players plus IMAC on the Canuck Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 6.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
At the Four Nations, ultimately Jordan Binnington got the job done as Lankinen makes a great save in the slot on a one-time chance through the middle by the former Canuck Jimmy Vesey. He was all alone in the slot. But Lankinen shut the door to preserve the Canuck lead. He's made a couple of big saves early in this third period.
Kevin Lankinen, spectacular performance between the pipes for the Canucks tonight in Colorado. 4-1 win over the Avalanche. Canucks eliminated from the postseason, but did win this hockey game against the Avs here tonight. And this is the Canuck Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. And tonight wasn't quite the sloppy hockey we saw. I mean, even last night between Minnesota and San Jose, and even, you know, the Canucks comeback against the Dallas Stars. But you can tell that these late season games, I wouldn't say have a preseason feel to them, but they do have a stakes are not very high feel to them.
Yeah, that's fair. You still got to compete
100%
in whatever the reality is. But like this felt like a far more conventional game than what the Dallas game was, right?
That was just chaos.
Chaos and miracles and all that sort of stuff. It's a great sign that team players are willing to compete and fulfill all that. But you know, replicating that is a lot tougher than what we saw tonight. And that's why I brought up what Rick Tocchet was talking about there in the second period and beyond, that there was a catering to the game and trying to solve problems. And it wasn't as loose in that final 40 than it was in the opening 20. And he mentioned that there's guys that are playing the right way. And he is trying to get guys in certain situations and that they deserve to keep playing for 20 goals and all that sort of stuff. But he does want to see them play the right way. And they are.
Yeah, they have been, right? And I think that those are some of the positives. We do have a lot of reaction on text inbox. Let's get to some of this before we get to some player audio post game. Keith says, people forget that Lekker, Mackey, and Mancini were drafted in the same year. He's young. What is his ceiling? For Mancini, I have a hard time figuring out the ceiling. Like we talked about, there was a play he made in a defensive zone on the 2-1 goal, just not reading it fast enough. And we saw the other game, he got walked a couple times, and there's some moments where he needs to be better defensively.
You liked a rush play tonight.
Yeah, it was on against Logan O'Connor, too, who's fast on the rush. Mm-hmm. And
not fast with the hands, though.
Not fast with the hands. No, he's not.
The fighting hands, not fighting the goal-scoring hands.
Hand. The fighting hands. Him and
I DPD. Choke, I choke.
Well, him and DPD both can maybe use some tips on fighting. But the willingness, you can't question, right? And the toughness and fearlessness, all those things are fantastic. But Logan O'Connor had a rush chance. And Mancini, and O'Connor's a good skater.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a really good job of staying with him. And then when O'Connor was trying to dip his shoulder and bend his knee and drive towards the net, he bodied him. And not to throw him over, but he just went up against him physically and did not allow O'Connor to do that and force him out wide and around the net. And if you can do things like that in transition, like those are real positives as a right-hand defenseman and having a guy that can do those things, I'm not sure on his ceiling yet. Like, I don't... The scouting report I got for some scouts I really respect around the league was kind of Nick Perbix from the Tampa Bay Lightning, who's very much a third pair defenseman who can play up your lineup a little bit. Yeah, I see that. Can he be a bit more? Can he be a five, maybe? Is that the ceiling?
Five.
Like, I think at top, like, I look at DPD, I'm like, there's top four ceiling there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'm seeing that with Mancini, but I see everyday defenseman. Even a five is not a bad thing. You're playing 18 minutes. That's
awesome.
Really good, right?
It's awesome.
So either way, there is real NHL potential there. I'm not convinced on what his ceiling is quite yet. Maybe ask me again next year. I want to be fair. But you see a lot of good traits, like the skating, the puck moving, the shot. You know, like he gets a shot through, creates rebounds, and there are a lot of things to like about him, but also a lot of stuff he has to work on. But to the point Keith makes, he was only drafted a few years ago, three years ago. We're talking about a guy who's very young, and as a fifth-round pick, to already be playing NHL games and being here, like that's, you know, it shows a lot of progress already for the young player. Seema says, I know Brock was offered 8 over 5. Does anyone know what he is wanting? How far apart are they? And we heard Brock today say that it's unlikely he's going to stay in Vancouver. So, Bick, we've talked about the Besser contract comparable. So 8 by 5 is $40 million. Let's just, for argument's sake, say that there was a $40 million offer made, and that's the best offer that's been made. We don't know exactly, but let's just, for argument's sake, say that's the case. We're looking at what for Besser? Anywhere from 49 to 55. I know the analytics projections had him at $63 million. I think that's a bit too high. We'll see.
That's close to the number I've bandied about for the whole time. Yeah.
You're right. Because you see it on, it's kind of the same thing as Suter, though, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you see the high end, but it's like, do you think Besser is Gensel? Right? Like, I'm not sure, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I see it. But let's say for argument's sake, it's $52 million. Just for argument's sake, they take $10 million off of it. Well, say it's 52. Canucks offered 40.
Yeah.
That's a $12 million gap. Yeah. And everything I've heard is that the Canucks have to get close to 50 for him to sign.
If I'm the Besser camp, I'm walking into every team that talks to me with Timo Meier, with Carter Verhaeghe.
Travis Konecny,
Jordan Kyrou, Philip Forsberg, Skinner.
Because goal scoring wise, he has the numbers back it up.
Again, from a statistical profile, he's beaten all those guys.
Yeah. He's not better than those guys. He shouldn't get paid more than those guys.
I'm just saying, from a statistical profile, he's outproduced a lot of those guys, except for Carter Verhaeghe.
Yeah.
So somebody was willing to pay those guys a certain amount, and Brock Besser has outproduced some of those guys. So, like, that's what I'm going to market with. Yes, it's fair to say. Is someone going to give him $72 million? Now, that was an 8-year contract. Like, years ago, Anders Lee got $49 million. Years ago. By today's money, that would be about $57 million. So, like, at bare minimum, like, if I'm Brock Besser, I'm saying I want the modern version of Anders Lee contract. At bare minimum. So, I think he's going to get paid. I really want to see what this contract looks like. Weirdly excited. Because I think the numbers should start with the 6, to be honest. It really should.
It should. I get what you're saying. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. But to the point, I think...
6 as in 60, not AAV.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. But I think it'll be in the 50 range in free agency. I think if the Canucks get to like 48, 49 million, like he would sign. They need to get up about...
That is such a hometown discount.
And that's a huge discount too. Yeah. But the Canucks, let's say, again... If 40 is the number, they at least have to go up anywhere from 8 to 10 million.
That's a large bridge to
that's
cover.
A 20% increase. That's an over 20% increase on their last offer, which is significant. Like, you know, like that's a big increase. So we'll see. And you can understand why Brock says it's unlikely.
Yeah,
because if he knows what his bare minimum is, and usually these guys have a pretty good sense of, like, ballpark what I'm going to get.
Somebody here is wrong. Either the Canucks are way undervaluing it,
No. The Canucks may not be wrong. Canucks may just say, like, this is the number that we have for you. Go make more elsewhere, but if you want to stay, this is what we give you. It's kind of the same thing with Bo. They said, our valuation is so different that we're going to trade you because it's just not working. Now, they did not trade Besser, obviously, and that's a whole other story at the deadline, but I don't think it's a situation where the Canucks are like, this is what we think you're going to get, so this is what we're offering. They know they're offering less than everybody else. They're saying, well, this is what we got for you. And I still think the Canucks will take another run at it before the season ends. Anything else on the text inbox before we hear from Canuck players here?
Let me bring up the inbox here. 650.
I'll get one in here. Fernando says, what's happening with Hedl? Is he coming back, or is he a bust, Fernando? Well, I mean, he suffered his fifth concussion. Right, he's not coming back this season, doesn't look like, and we're hoping the best for him for next season, but his career is not over yet or anything like that, but he's done for the year, it seems like.
This one from Brian in Richmond, this will be the first offseason where we aren't shopping for a D-man in I don't know how long. Plus, we have cap space, especially if we are not re-signing Brock. I'm excited for the offseason. That is Brian in Richmond. Yeah. You know, we talk so much about during the season of off-season stuff. We get closer every single day.
We're getting closer.
Things like the Besser contract. I'm just so pumped up to see what it comes out to.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a seven. This time next week, the season is going to be over for the Canucks. They play next Thursday, right? The 16th?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Less than a week away?
Yeah. So we're getting... No, next Wednesday. Sorry.
Yeah, next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
Yeah.
So less than a week away. Only three more games to go in the campaign. Lotso says, all true, but do the Canucks even have 50? Doubted. Do they even have three other players to pay first? They have three other players to pay first. I mean, they have 50, as in like the money to pay him. They could pay him. The thing is, can you pay him and everybody else? That's always the big issue.
Yeah, they have $14 million.
They can pay
available.
Him and Suter. The thing is, the Canucks can pay Suter. They can pay Besser. But once they pay those two guys, they'll only have about $2 million left over. And if you subtract a player, maybe $3 million total. So you can keep this team. You just can't do much in addition to this team. And that's part of it. You can bring all three of the guys back. Forbert. Your money, honestly, if you pay Forbert, Suter, and Besser, that takes up your cap space.
Yeah.
You could do that if you like. But to Lotso's point, you know, I mean, there's other things you have to also do.
Then you're banning it all on Elias Pettersson.
And we see what the confidence is there. Salim in Vancouver, hope this can be read as interested in the probability. What is better, Besser signing at 9 or offer sheet Matthew Knies at 9.5? I mean, I'd rather offer sheet Knies.
Really?
No?
You're losing the draft picks.
Yeah, so? You're getting Knies. You'd rather just keep Besser?
Yeah. I like Knies too, but I'm not... losing.
I mean,
draft
9.5 pick. Is a first, second, and third. It's nothing.
Yeah, but is he like appreciably that much better than Brock Besser?
I think so. He's faster. He's younger.
I don't know.
He's a left-hand shot, I guess.
I'm not sure that's worth a first, second, and a third.
6'3", 227.
Again, I really like the player.
He's scored 29 goals this year.
Yeah.
He's really good. I don't know. Yeah.
It's a lot of money and draft picks. He's not making $9.5 million anyways. The RFAs, we had an RFA question. You've brought this up a lot. The offer sheet is not really a market that they can live in because they don't have...
they got to get their own third-round pick back and in 2026.
So you've either got to go big game hunting in the offer sheet compensation...
Or go for second-round pick valuation.
Or go for second-round pick. Like, there's no... Yeah. You can't even do the 1, 2, and 3.
No, you can't. You have to get your third round pick. But it's just hypothetically speaking. The question was hypothetical. Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm honest, I don't even think you're getting Knies at 9.5, though. I don't think Knies would sign that offer sheet.
Do you think he's getting more than 9.5?
I don't think he's signed. I think for an offer sheet, he would want more.
Shout out Matthew Knies.
I'm just saying.
Big payday.
Dude, the cap's going to be dumb. The cap's going to get dumb. It's going to get really stupid in a couple of years. Just wait, guys. And you know, like the Pettersson, I'm not saying the Pettersson deal is going to be good if he struggles, but the 11.6 isn't going to look ridiculous
in general.
It's going to look really stupid in a while. But as long as he finds his game, and we'll hope for that. Before we get to IMAC, let's get to one of the Canuck players post game. And a player who's had a fantastic year for the Canucks is Kiefer Sherwood. And here he is post game talking about them playing to their identity this evening.
Earlier today, it was just talked about sticking to team identity for these last four. Is that what you guys did tonight?
Yeah, I thought we played pretty well. Limited their scoring chances, and I thought we played a pretty stingy game. And I think we got a lot of contribution from a lot of guys. It was a great game by Lanky, and it was a good last road game for us.
What was the message heading into this one?
Just play our game, play to our identity. You know, it doesn't matter the playoff race. Like, these things translate into development and down the road. So, you know, it sucks, obviously. I got eliminated last night, but, you know, I think we still have a lot of pride and continue to put our best foot forward.
Defenseman Elias Pettersson grabs his first fight. Thoughts on his battle?
Yeah, he's been looking for it for a little bit. We kind of talked about it last night a little bit, actually. I thought he looked like just Mike Tyson, just throwing him and taking him and throwing him more. So, I'm sure he's going to have to brush up on some technique, but it was great. It was great. He plays a hard game, and it's probably the first of many just because he's going to get under guys' skin a lot with his physicality.
Are you teaching him a few things?
No, that's not my department.
That is Kiefer Sherwood after the game. Mike Tyson even drops Mike Tyson.
Iron Petey. There Iron we Petey. Go. We got there at the end of the night. Is this Punch Out?
Let's go. So good.
Well done, Eddie.
I love playing Punch Out.
I was terrible at it.
I was so bad.
Terrible. I had to watch other people try to get to...
But anytime you got to Mike Tyson, you got messed up.
Yeah.
You got messed up on Mike. Oh, my goodness. So today we had Super Mario Bros. because I was wearing a red t-shirt and Reach was wearing a green.
Yeah, so I saw that, yeah.
So now I want to play this, and I want to play Mario Brothers. Bring me back to my childhood. 90s beckoning. Yeah. Oh. That was great stuff. But yeah.
Hey, what was the guy's name in Punch-Out? Like who was the boxer that you got to play with?
It was like the Rocky guy. He looked like Rocky, but it wasn't Rocky.
Yeah, yeah, but like who like what was his name? Was it not was it Junior? Or I can't remember what it was.
I'm just going off a list here. There's...
No, it was man, Little something.
I got Glass Joe.
Okay. No, those are the guys you fight. The character that you played with. What was his name?
I can't remember.
Someone text in 650-650.
Someone would let us know. We'll get to IMAC coming up here in a second, so I'm sure he will know.
Yeah.
Owen and Burnaby, so nostalgic. Yeah, very nostalgic.
Yeah, it was great.
Somebody asked us, well, how about Ryan McLeod as an offer sheet? What do you think of Ryan McLeod? Because I think people look at him as like, can he be the next Dylan Holloway? Big, fast, right. Untapped potential.
Little Mac, by the way.
Little Mac. Little Mac. That's what it was. Little Mac.
Okay. Little Mac. Junior Mac. It's something, something there.
Yeah.
Little Mac.
Little Mac. Ryan McLeod.
Sorry, I'm still in punch-out mode.
Yeah, we're
Ryan McLeod.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he would kind of fit that second round range, right?
Yeah.
Has 49 points this year. I'm just not sure he has a ceiling. You know, that like, you know. But in that second round pick range, I could see it being an interesting guy to go after.
Didn't they pay quite a bit to acquire him anyway?
I think they got a second and a prospect or something.
It was Savoy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Savoy, but I mean, yeah. Savoy's, yeah. It's not going to be easy.
Again,
people asking us.
I really like McLeod.
Yeah.
But that's probably going to cost you in that second round range.
Yeah, Hamad texted in, Little Mac. Yeah,
there you go. Stuff. Thank you. Thank you very much. Marco Rossi, offer sheet. What would it take?
No, I'm good.
He's scoring a lot of goals.
We need other little guys. We don't need more little guys on this team. Too many little guys.
He's got 60 points. You're like, banish him to the shadow realm.
No, too many little guys. I need bigger guys.
But would you rather... Not cost of acquisition or anything like that. Second line center, him or Filipino?
I don't know. I might go with the concussions.
No, that's terrible.
You're right. It's probably how obvious it is. But I'm not offer sheeting him. Anyways, we're not doing trades. We're doing offer sheets. So let's bring in Ian McIntyre in. We call him the triple threat because you watch him on TV, read him on digital, about to hear him on radio. IMAC is on the air.
Actually walking outside a ball arena. Is that what they call it now? Yeah. Ball arena. I want to call it the Pepsi Center. And looking around lovely downtown skyline of Denver, which is one of the great underrated cities in the United States. I've always loved coming to Denver. Broke my heart a little bit when the Avalanche and the Canucks were separated into different divisions because that was a rivalry for a time. But it's nice to be back for the final road game of the year, the final post-game road appearance, telephone appearance. The final three will all be together.
Oh, yeah. We get to just hang out and just bask in the glory of what's been a fantastic season.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm blathering on a little bit.
No.
I get kind of, I don't know what the term is. I should know because I'm a writer. Wistful?
I know what you mean.
Towards the end of the season. Reflective.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the season. You think of all the things that you've done, all the things you've seen, all the crazy stories that you've written, and occasionally some good ones too. But I'll look forward to catching my breath a little bit.
Yeah,
after three more games.
No, I hear you.
Melancholy musings from Ian.
Yeah.
Oh, but, no. By the way, Bic.
Yes.
I'm assuming you were suitably outraged when the Avalanche didn't pull their goalie down 4-1.
No, not at all, because they're in the playoffs. Their season isn't on the line.
Okay, so there's no superficial bravado involved in their part. The coach doesn't have to prove anything to anybody to pull the goalie just to show that he cares.
No, I mean, they're resting guys for this game.
Yeah, they're in the playoffs. Okay. Their seasons are on the line.
All right. How do you know Bednar cares?
I think you're misconstruing what this was all about.
Oh, okay. All right. That's quite possible.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about this more in person. I think this needs...
No, I'm done with it.
So, okay, you were there.
He wants a melancholy conversation.
You want melancholy. I mean, here we are with another season. We're way too familiar with non-playoff campaigns, despite the fact that we had one last year. But as far as what you saw from the young players tonight in Colorado, what stood out to you?
Did you guys ever see the movie Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead?
I don't know if I ever watched it, but I know what movie it is.
One of Christopher Walken's finest performances, a young Andy Garcia, great cast. I'd highly recommend it. I've still got Denver on my mind. So I actually heard John Denver on the radio today singing Rocky Mountain High, and I kid you not. What stood out? I mean, it was fun, you know. It was fun to see young Elias or Junior. I don't know if Junior is going to catch on. I guess anything can in time. But kind of, you know, stand up for himself. Just get angry enough to drop the gloves and challenge somebody. You probably, because Murph was there talking to him when I was, so did you guys get tape of Elias mumbling about his fight or
no, we haven't aired that.
We haven't aired it. Okay. We didn't get the best audio for it.
He said, first of all, I asked him, but I should have known this because I should have looked it up. I said, you didn't have a fight in the AHL this year? And he said, no. And I said, well, when was your last fight in hockey? And he sort of shrugged, like, never. I said, well, have you ever had a fight at any point, like even in school? And he says, just with gloves on, never drop the gloves. So it was a night for him. It certainly got the bench fired up. But, you know, as I made the point in my story, this is, you know, it's over for the Canucks now. Obviously, they're out of the playoff race. But it's not over for anybody on the team. Mm-hmm. And if you look at tonight, okay, so Sherwood's trying to be a 20-goal scorer and trying to push higher what's already been a breakthrough season. For him, you have two of the scorers tonight in the third period, Dakota Joshua and Nils Höglander, both trying to put a better end on what has been really tough seasons for them, and especially for Dakota. So they're still playing for something these last couple of games. You know, Kevin Lankinen has had a great year, and he's had a bit of a dip recently. And now he's got Thatcher Demko back and healthy. He's trying to finish as strongly as he started the season. Like, these, anytime you're the backup goalie, and I don't care whether, you know, you're a 1B or you know, the backup behind Connor Hellebuck, whenever you get a chance to play, you're absolutely trying to make the most of it. And he did that tonight. I think there's a lot of guys with still things to show. All these young guys, you know, Ratu and Carlson, both of whom are waiver eligible next year, you know, basically auditioning now, trying to establish, you know, their standing now to try and make the Canucks next September. There's a lot of stuff that's still meaningful on an individual basis. As Sherwood told me after the game, his attitude is you work your whole life to get to the NHL. So there's never a game that should not mean something to you.
I don't know if it was your question to talk it about the Ratu line on a whole. And if it does feel like that's something that they can carry over into next season with Ratu, Joshua, and Sherwood and whatever deployment. But it does feel like there's something gelling with those three guys.
Yeah, I mean, for now, I think it's a bit of a leap to say, you know, they could be aligned next season. I mean, certainly in training camp, they might be. We'll see. You know, Ratu still has to show that he can play. And when I say that, I mean, yes, he's got some goals and he's a very good prospect and he can play hockey, but can he be a dependable 200-foot center, or at least can he eventually become that? That's what the team needs to find out. Unfortunately, they're going to have to make a decision before next season starts because of his waiver status. But yes, that I like that line. I like that there's a physical edge to Ratu, not a meanness, although I wouldn't mind that either, but just kind of an edgy physicality to him, as there is with those other two guys. I think that's partly why they play well off each other. You know, often we look at components of a line and you want all these sort of contrasting and complementing things. Well, these guys have some things in common, which I think work for them as a line. And, yeah, I mean, we know that Sherwood and Joshua are going to be here. We know that next year Sherwood will be coming off a career season. And you know, he's one of these guys. He reminds me a lot, actually, of somebody like Alex Burrows, not necessarily in the way he plays, although he does get under opponent's skin as well, but in that it was hard for him to get to where he has. I mean, the long shot, his odds weren't as long as Burrows was, you know, when Burrows was getting ready to quit the East Coast Hockey League. But nothing has come easy for Kiefer Sherwood, and he had to adapt and adjust and fight and fight and fight and fight to become an NHL player. And I get the sense from him, as I did from Alex Burrows every day of Burrows' career, that Kiefer Sherwood's never going to take that for granted. I don't know how I got off on a tangent there, but Sherwood will be back trying to be even better next year. We know that Dakota Josh will be back trying to have a bounce back season and hopefully having a strong finish to kind of launch him into the off season and give him some positivity for next year. And then, you know, the big question is what can Ratu become? Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of summer is he going to have? We know that he had a very good summer last year in picking up a stride in his skating. Can he get even a little bit quicker? I love the fact, by the way, that Ratu actually wins faceoffs, because Canucks don't have anybody else who does that.
Yeah.
And even if he can continue to work on that and be strong at that, that is going to get him some latitude to give him some room to work on his game in other areas at this level. That can help him. So yeah, I like those three guys, but I liked a lot of guys tonight. I thought it's ironic that on the road trip in which they're eliminated from the playoffs, they have one of their most encouraging weeks of the season in terms of grit and character and resourcefulness and team depth and, you know, drive and engagement, all those things in these two games against Dallas and Colorado were very impressive.
Yeah, they were, and we'll see what the Canucks have in store for us for the final three home games. The road campaign is over. We look forward to seeing you at the rink on Saturday, Ian, and we'll do our best to close the season out in style from our perspective.
Well, I'll look forward to that.
And I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca, which I know, are you finished, or are you still putting the finishing
pieces
together?
Yeah, it's filed.
Is it filed? Okay.
It's being edited as we speak, as I squander time on the radio. And I squander your time, not my time. This is the highlight for me. I know I'm wasting your guys' time.
No, we're honored. Hey, we're on company time.
Reading your pieces recently has not been wasted time at all.
It's been unreal.
Yeah.
The content king has come through the last couple of days, I will say. It's been really good content.
Well, thank you very much. Sometimes some longevity and trust and having a working for a company that still believes in paying the money to travel and cover the National Hockey League properly has rewards. I was happy that Quinn and Brock talked to me this week, and I hope that it gave you guys a lot to talk about.
Oh, it did.
My understanding is I have filled a lot of programming.
Oh, you have. It's been fantastic, honestly. And we would have spoke to you about it more, but we'll talk more about some of the things that you uncovered, or at least shown some light on as the week goes on here. But great stuff, great content, and that's why you're the best.
Well, thank you. I love to talk about me, so anytime you guys like,
yeah,
feel free.
Yeah, we'll bring up more adulations next time. Thanks. Thanks, Ian.
Good night, fellas.
That's Ian McIntyre. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. That brings us to the end of our program. Bic, are you going to be on time tomorrow for the People Show?
Yeah.
Your show's on at 3 o'clock.
I'll definitely be there for 3 o'clock.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. I look forward to seeing you on time tomorrow.
You know the worst part? You know how we joked the other day? It's like we all wait for
someone to make a mistake.
So, again, I screwed up. But usually I'm quick to, like, fire back. It's like I don't even have anything.
No, you can't. What are you going to fire back? You're going to take it.
I know. You're going to sit here and wait for Riccio to screw up.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. That's just around the corner. Maybe tomorrow on Canuck Central, 4 to 6.
Yeah,
but special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory. Thank you all for listening, participating, being part of the show. It's always a pleasure. Enjoy your evenings. Be safe. This has been the Canuck Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canuck, Sportsnet 650.